Welcome to Off the Bench with Danny Cannell.
Back to throw, first and 10, the pass completes his tight end.
And Rajah Bell.
Bell has done something. 22 to Rajah.
Saw the future of football right before your eyes. Just yell it out, man. He can't guard me.
Welcome to Off the Bench with Bell and Cannell.
Woo!
Yeah, you like that, right? It's got more of a ring. I swear it's got a better ring. But anyway, I'm here driving today. I got Hannah riding shotgun, Debo on the ones and twos. Our boy Danny is up at Shinnecock. Like, what a life, right?
What a life.
Yeah,
hang on. He's snapping away. He's all over his Instagram. No shame, though.
Who cares about your day job? but anyway, today we'll be talking NBA draft. We got Gary Parrish on later in the show. But first, apparently, Debo brought this to my attention. I said Tiger would win the U.S. Open after the Players.
Definitely said that.
And we're on Long Island this weekend. So the question is, do I expect Tiger to fulfill what I projected him to do? The answer is no. But why don't we hear from Tiger himself talking about the pressure to perform at this year's U.S. Open.
I'm looking forward to having the opportunity and having the challenge. Hopefully, I can play well enough to put myself there. Will there be any extra pressure? I think that that's just natural. There would be. I mean, it's a major championship. There's only four of these a year. That'd be a nice problem to have. And so hopefully I can do that.
All right. I speaking for Tiger fans, I guess you wouldn't fall in that category, Hannah.
No, I'm gonna bow out respectively. I can't with him.
I am a Tiger fan. He's got three career U.S. Opens wins. He's 2000, 2002, 2008. But he hasn't participated in a while, and Shinnecock is as good a test of golf as there is out there. So, look, I expect Tiger to continue the trend, like Danny and I have talked about a lot on the pod. He's been trending in the right direction. His game has been rounding into form. He's had an issue on the putting greens, and the green complex at Shinnecock can be really tough. But he said he found something in his stroke while he was working back at home in Jupiter. And if he can do that, I think he'll be right there in the mix. The scary part for me this weekend is, like, Shinnecock is known to be a tough driving place. It's an old-school golf course. You have to drive the ball straight. And they've widened the fairways. Last time they were there, they were, like, 25 yards wide. They're up to, like, 46, I believe. But they've replaced, like, 200,000 yards of sod with fescue. So if you miss the fairway, you're punching out. Like, it's a pitch out. It's a second shot golf course. So if he's wild off the tee, which he's shown a propensity to be this year at times, he could be in a little bit of trouble.
Did he ever say anything about his back?
The back hasn't been on the table this year, which I appreciate, because like I said before, if he comes out with back problems again, I got to be out. The back hasn't been an issue. It's really
mentioned his back last time.
He's sore like a normal 42-year-old would be, but nothing out of the ordinary like he's suffered in previous.
Yeah, it hasn't been like the glutes not firing and the back not giving him. He's mentioned, I think he had a tight back in one tournament. The good news for Tiger is, like, again, it's a second shot golf course, and his strokes gained stats in 2018. Approach to the green is fourth, and around the green he's fifth. And that's really what you're going to have to do around Shinnecock. You're going to have to be able to get up and down, because, again, if you miss, you're in the fescue. I mean, you're going to be pitching out, and then it's whether you can get up and down or if you can pull some rabbits out of your hat and make some things happen around the green. And I think that part of his game is in really good shape. So, again, I hope Tiger is in form. I hope he continues to follow trend. And when you're talking about trending golfers, like, at the top of the list is Dustin Johnson, right? Like, he's just coming off of a win at the St. Jude FedEx Classic. He's got two wins this year, two seconds, and seven top tens. So he's got to be one of the favorites going in. And we got some sound from Dustin Johnson talking about trying to win his second U.S. Open.
For me, I think it's hard to get number two right now. But it was hard to get number one. But I think it's hard to get any of them. It's just a tough task. There's only four majors. And, you know, to win a major, you have to have everything working very well. You know, and you got to play really good all four rounds.
That sounds kind of like it speaks for it. So what do you mean you got to play all four rounds? Like, that doesn't that just make sense?
72 holes?
Yeah, but I mean, no shit, you got to play well all four rounds to win a major. Like, we're not playing like in the municipal, like, twilight round. No, but Dustin's I think I'm picking Dustin to win. And I know I said Tiger before.
Can I do the same, or will I jinx it?
No, dude, hop on this bandwagon.
With my record, I feel like I have a bad rep, but I'm going to go with you on this one. I'm actually a big fan of him. I enjoy watching him.
Well, Dustin, well, he's the favorite. He's the heavy favorite at 7-1. And our, like, Danny would surely say, I'm not going to touch that because in golf, like, anything can happen.
Right.
The value, there's no value there. But Tiger's 14-1. JT, friend of the show, 14-1. Rory McIlroy at 12-1. I think another name that I like, Ricky Fowler, 18-1. Like, low shot trajectory. You're out there on Long Island, like in the Hamptons, a lot of wind blowing. It's going to really dictate some holes to players. And a guy with a low shot trajectory can be really dangerous if he's got it cooking. So I like Ricky Fowler. But you know what? You know, I remember is I'm watching that clip of DJ. And the last time we were on the pod, Danny was saying that he was like a like he wasn't maybe like the brightest bulb in the pack. You guys remember Danny saying that?
Yep.
Did it sound like that a little bit? Like, did that is that my imagination? Like, is that like.
He could be onto something with that.
Really?
I don't know if I want to comment, but I.
Where are you heading with this?
Maybe a good. I could maybe
someone he's attached to.
No, no, not at all. No, no, no. Don't think.
What is
Miss
Gretzky? She's like, is she a bless your heart?
I don't know.
I don't know what that term means.
I do.
So David Griffin used to have a term for like for guys in the NBA. No one in particular. Like they looked the part, right? Like. 6'9", two guard,
yeah.
With handles, can jump out of the gym. Like, everything is perfect, but he's a bless your heart, which means, like, there's just something missing upstairs a little bit. It's a bless your heart.
Bless your heart. No, I love that phrase. That's great.
Is she a bless your heart? Do you know this?
No, I don't know.
I'm going to steal that.
You're going to steal the bless your heart?
I'm going to steal it for her.
Shout out, Griff. Oh, so she is a bless your heart.
Shout out, Griff.
Is DJ a bless your heart? I don't know him. I'm mad.
Yeah, like we're all just judging these people's personality.
Yeah, but I mean, that's what we do, right? Like we're
but that's, we should do that. Wait, I have to say something. Is Tiger still on that yacht?
155-foot yacht.
$20 million?
Yeah, I just looked this up. It says that he could pay over $1,000 each day to dock this. It's like a 155-foot yacht. It's unbelievable.
$1,000 a day. That's like you dropping like $1.50 at Starbucks.
Do you think we could trade?
Well, look,
I think there's any way
he may have an advantage because I heard like I was listening to Brant Snedeker talk yesterday a little bit. And apparently the traffic, and this is a big beef of mine. I don't mean to take us like off the rails, but since I'm hosting,
you're good.
I'm going to do whatever the hell I want.
It's Bell and Cannell.
I hate traffic.
Bell and Cannell.
Bell and Cannell. Danny, it's a wrap. I hate traffic. It's like the biggest pet peeve of mine.
Of course.
And apparently, like when you're out there on Long Island, my in-laws live on Long Island. So I have to take this drive out to the Hamptons. It's one way. It's one road in, one road out. And so if you are east of Shinnecock Hills, the traffic is fine. If you are west of Shinnecock Hills and you have to get to your tee time, you might have to leave your hotel, which could be like 8 miles away. Like
you're screwed.
3.5-4 hours prior to your tee
time. Oh, so you support the yacht movement.
I think it could be like when you're talking about getting over the hump with like little things, like pro golfers and Brant Snedeker said this, like the last thing they want to do is sit around in the clubhouse like 3 hours early waiting for a round just because you didn't know what traffic was going to be like.
Right.
And you want to be in like your best headspace. So I actually could make a case for the yacht being like a really good thing.
I'm just bitter.
Well, I don't hate on Jupiter's finest.
Phil, I know. Probably I'm afford a yacht.
Well, look, Phil Mickelson, and we didn't talk about Phil. Phil was 22-1, right? He has never won the U.S. Open. It's the one major that's eluded him. He's had, what is it, five? He's five-time major champion. And he's finished second. How many times do you know? 6 times in the U.S. Open. He's got some demons here at Shinnecock Hills also. He had a 3-putt in 04 from 5 feet away to double bogey on 17 to lose the tournament. It's one of his heartbreaks in the U.S. Open. And here's a little Phil sound on taking on the challenges of this year's Shinnecock.
The challenge of the greens being extended and all the contours will continue to take balls further from the hole, but you end up in fairway and have a shot, albeit a difficult one. And I feel like your short game is going to be challenged. Putting will be challenged as well as ball striking, irons, driver. I feel as though the luck of a course has been taken out as much as possible to where skill is the primary factor. I think we're going to have a great leaderboard and a great tournament.
I just love the way Phil like subtly and throw shade at prior courses and he's been really outspoken about the way the PGA sets up some of these courses and how unfair they've been. And you know, I think he's right though. I think the fact that they've trimmed down some of those areas around the green will bring shot making back into play. You'll have to have your short game really dialed in, and typically that's Phil's MO. The problem is this year, his strokes gained stats for 2018, he is 79th around the green. And that's not really, you know, wheelhouse Phil. That's not really like top of his game Phil. But his putting is second on the PGA Tour. And so that speaks well, because you are going to have to putt well at Shinnecock. The question is, do you think Phil gets a win this weekend? Do you think mentally he can put the demons away from that 0-4 loss and all of the losses at U.S. Open and get it done?
I was going to ask. It's kind of the same thing going back to Tiger Woods. About a month ago, Jack Nicklaus said, Tiger has to learn how to win again.
Right.
Phil has to just learn how to win the this U.S. event. Open. Can both of those guys overcome mental demons? You know, golf, a mental game.
Yeah.
Do you think that is in each of their heads?
I think that certainly being at a specific tournament could start to creep in. Like when we're talking about Phil, I think there becomes a little bit more pressure placed on getting that U.S. Open. When your resume is as rounded as Phil's is, and you've experienced success everywhere except one particular event, I think there can be some pressure there. I do think Phil will be in the mix this weekend. It's a grinder's course. It's a place where, you know, things go wrong and you're in that fescue, you're gonna have to be creative, you're gonna have to just stick around and find ways to make shots. I think that speaks to Phil's game a little bit. And Tiger, yeah, definitely, when you've been out for as long as Tiger's been out and you haven't played golf and you haven't been in those winning situations, I think there is something to having to learn, you know, how to do it again. So, you know, the big thing for me is the course. And what you can never predict when you're going out to a course, no matter how well the PGA sets it up, no matter how many changes they make towards to the old design, is you don't know how it's going to play. And the feedback so far is it's been really good. But if that wind starts howling and things go sideways, you know, it could just be a completely different animal than what guys have seen in the practice rounds. And so, you know, that remains to be seen. So let's pick. Like, who's your favorite? I'm going to take, wait for it, Justin Rose.
Ooh.
Yeah, I didn't talk about him at all, but he's a grinder. He won a U.S. Open, when was that, 16?
Yes.
And Marion, really tough.
That was at Oakmont.
Oakmont? Justin Rose did?
2016.
Oh, 15 was at
2013 at Marion.
My bad. 2013 at Marion. But another link style, wide open, really tough up and down golf course. And so I'm going to pick Justin Rose because I think
so
he's a grinder.
Just throwing Hannah off the scent when you said DJ.
Yeah, no, earlier. I'm going DJ. Yeah, I'm sticking to my guns.
No way.
I think it's smart for you to go with a favorite.
Yeah, because I always go the opposite.
Did I pick DJ?
Yeah, you said it. And I was like, I'm going with you, Raja. But
no,
it's fine.
And I said, come
I
on
walk
with
alone.
Me. Let's get on this boat and let's go. Yeah,
I stand
now
alone.
You're all
now.
Alone, baby. I'm rolling with, yeah.
Jason Day, a little bit of value there.
Really? Anything in particular? You just like the value?
Value.
All right.
That's what golf's about.
I'm going to go Justin. You got DJ. Danny would probably take who if he was here?
Tiger.
There we go.
Sure.
Picks and props? Is that a bet for?
We'll get to picks and props. I want to ask you, though. The over-under for the winning score on the course is 275.5. So it's a par 70, which means you're getting 280. So the winning score would have to be -5 for the over to hit there.
-5 for the over? So if I'm taking the
under to hit.
For the under, I would have to be -5 or -6.
Yes.
Correct? I'm going to go over. Yeah, I think we'll be right around 4-under, 3-under. At least that's the way the PGA wants it.
The last time the U.S. Open was at Shinnecock, Retief Goosen won at -4.
-4, huh? I just said I'll take the under.
But the course has changed, like you said.
It has, but they're saying it's more playable now than it was then, so then I'll go over. It was lengthened, but they're saying it's more playable, so I'll go over.
More coming up in picks and props.
More coming up in picks and props. All right, so we just touched on the U.S. Open. We'll have to cover that, I guess, a little bit more in the picks and props. But right now, we've got You Have to See It.
You have to see it.
And so we're talking about Dustin and Justin and Tiger and all those guys wanting to hoist championship trophies. There were two teams that got to do it yesterday. The Warriors and the Cavs held their championships parade.
Yeah, and Steph Curry was just going wild like we haven't seen him before. Steve Kerr said he was getting lit for the both of us. At one point, I saw rookie Jordan Bell go into the crowd, grab a bottle of Hennessy.
Yeah, he needed Hennessy.
Yeah,
start drinking.
What has happened to these parades?
I mean, when you win 3 times in 4 years, you got to get creative. Klay Thompson and Zaza Pachulia on the same float together. They're just a dynamic duo. So the Warriors enjoyed themselves, and so did the Caps. Ovechkin, I don't think, has stopped partying. He's on a 72, 96, 100-hour-plus bender at this point.
Why not?
First title in franchise history. Ovechkin, first cup in 13 seasons in the NHL.
I love this.
Good turnouts. It's no birds parade, but good turnouts.
Oh, my. I knew you were going to throw that in there.
Never been a part of a championship parade. It looks like it's phenomenal, and it looks like the lines between, like, the fans and the teams are blurring, And I think we should just do like one big, like, forget the parade. Let's just do a big party with everybody lumped into one like
spot,
and let's just get lit. Let's have Jordan Bell.
What was that like in Miami? I don't even remember.
Did you didn't go?
No.
How old were you? When they won the first one, not the most recent one.
What year was
like,
the first one?
06.
Oh,
06? Yeah. Like, yeah, would have been like parade time.
You're right.
For
no,
Montana,
I was in
right?
I was in middle school.
Yeah, you guys didn't go down?
I like had just started middle school.
You go to the 03 Marlins parade?
No.
97.
No. I became a Marlins fan later in life.
All right. Well, you've seen the parades. Now you have to hear it.
You have to hear it.
Lonzo Ball.
Ooh, this is so good.
Lonzo Ball, diss track on Kyle Kuzma, titled Kylie Kuzma. Did he take it too far?
Probably a little sexist, but let's hear it.
All right. We thumbing through that money. Look at y'all. Y'all playing with your thumbs. Don't know who your daddy is. Well, your ass is getting
some. We both taking shots. The only difference, you ain't hitting none. Okay. I don't know if you caught that.
I would just like a moment of silence for all the respect I had for the Ball family out the freaking window. I cannot stand him. I think like he thinks he's so hot, and this song just proves it. I can't freaking stand him. I want to hit him in the face.
What say you?
Did you catch that? Yeah. Don't know who your daddy is. Well, your ass is getting sunned. We both taking shots. The only difference is you ain't hitting none, which is just factually inaccurate.
Yes, correct.
But like, also, why is he doing this? Why? Why? Just.
I actually like Lonzo. I do. Like, and I mean, and I don't. No. I mean, I like his personality in that. Like,
he lets
this is
his
all.
Dad do it.
And this is all good fun with him and Kyle Kuzma. Like, they got this back and forth where. You know, you could tell a lot from a teammate and the way he responds to Lonzo. And his teammates seem to love him. And I know everybody hates
that
the
is
dad,
true.
And, but the teammates seem to love his vibe. I like LeVar, too. But I like that these guys are having fun. Look, they come into a lot of money. They're playing in the NBA. Yes, it's your job, but you should be able to have fun and still live your life, provided you're still working on your task. And I like that you get some glimpses into, like, who these guys are in their locker room. So I like it.
Yes, fine. You're right. I still just, I hate it.
What did we think about the lyrics themselves? Like his ability, like his rap ability.
I don't care.
Is he writing them?
Yeah, that's the thing. What do we actually know about this? Because I wouldn't trust that he's writing this.
Well, you guys have your finger on the pulse of that. Like, you know, I don't know. Like, is there some ghostwriting? Do you have any?
You said you want to write some diss tracks the other day on last podcast.
Oh, let's go. I could do this.
I don't know. We don't have our in-house rapper. Danny's out of Shinnecock.
Read and react.
All right. We're ready for our next segment. It's called Read and React. So this is a headline from CBSSports.com. Andrew Luck is throwing high school-sized footballs. Says he'll be ready for week one. I guess when you're rehabbing, like you go through different weights of balls and sizes of balls. This is a good sign for Andrew Luck. Anytime you're throwing again, I think it's good. There's not a huge difference between a high school size ball and a college and pro size ball.
A woman's and a men's basketball, or what's the difference there?
I think that's fair.
What are your kids playing?
Yeah, I mean they're
different. Is it below high school level right now?
Yes, they're in a peewee ball, and that's noticeable. I mean, there's a huge difference between a peewee ball and a college or pro ball. Don't know if there's a difference between college and pro. I think it's the same. And high school is marginally different. Like, I don't think it's going to be a huge difference. So this is a really good sign.
For
Indianapolis. And
so it's more the fact that he's throwing, not the fact that it's with a high school football. You're focusing on that throwing part.
Yeah, because I don't see the ball as being the huge thing. The motion and the fact that he's doing it, I think it's huge. Now, if you told me he was throwing a tennis ball, like, that'd be different. But he's
right,
like a racquetball. But he's throwing a high school sized ball. I think, you know, that's nothing but good for Indianapolis. Let's go to another segment called Move the Needle.
Move the Needle.
We'll see if these move the needle for you at all. World Cup kicks off tomorrow. No USA. How does that impact your interest level? Like, who are we rooting for? What's going on?
This is your thing, right? You're so into this.
Love the World Cup.
I know your wife played soccer.
Yes.
Do you guys have any, like, traditions that you do?
Nah, no traditions. I just TiVo every game I can get my... Not TiVo,
TiVo!
Sorry. I DVR every game I can get my hands on, and we just sit there with the kids and watch them. So.
I didn't mean to scream into the microphone. I just got so excited. No worries. TiVo does still exist because I did research on it after we talked about it during one podcast.
Really?
It still exists. I don't suggest buying it. But
and
no, that's
on the podcast one time, Raja said the World Cup is his favorite time of the year.
Dude, yes. I went on the other day. I went on like my on-demand, and it lets you pick like five of your favorite teams. So I picked France, England, Portugal, Brazil, and Germany. And I can TiVo every
front runner.
I can DVR every game they have, but I figure they're going to play some of the other teams anyway. So if I just get those main teams, I can watch all the games. Like, what are you looking for in this? There are a lot of storylines
today. Spain firing, sacking is what they call it. Sacking their manager,
right?
A day before the World Cup starts.
Where do you take a job? Real Madrid?
Yeah, but this is unrelated to that.
Yeah, that's unheard of. Like, there had to be, like we talked about it prior to the pod, there's got to be something sketchy going on in...
I don't want to speculate.
In Russia. You know what my favorite storyline from this is Ronaldo. This could be like his last real chance with Portugal at a World Cup. I think the next time... What's he, 32 now?
32, 33.
Yeah, the next time it comes around, like, now you're talking about being long in the tooth. Odds 4-1, Brazil, Germany coming in, the trying to defend at 5-1. France is one of my favorite teams in the world. I really love Paul Pogba. Yeah, I like the way they play with like a Brazil kind of feel. It's like Jogo Bonito, kind of like less structured and more free flowing. What's your team?
I don't know. I'm looking now. I don't know.
Nigeria,
huh? That's the you pulled that name out of the hat. You
that's
said
the draw.
All right. Well, we'll be pulling for.
I should just like pick one out of a hat. I really pick one. I don't know which one I want. I'm gonna go with Germany.
Germany. You know what I'm disappointed is not in? I mean, aside from the USA, mm-hmm. The Netherlands. I really like to watch the Netherlands play.
All right.
Yeah.
We did learn today that North America will get to host the 2026 World Cup. So that's going to be a combination of the USA, Mexico, and Canada.
So dope.
But we have to wait 8 years for that. Hopefully.
You going?
USA qualifies.
8 years. Goodness gracious. I hope I'm going. I hope I'm going. All right. Well, so that sounded like it moved the needle a little bit, right?
I'm about it. I got to get into
lots
it. This
of, lots of betting. Myself.
Lots of betting going on. All right. Well, here's another one. Let's see if this moves the needle for you. Lamar Jackson, according to reports, lining up at different positions. Apparently, has left teammates in awe, comparing him to young Michael Vick, has spent shared time on the field with Joe Flacco. John Harbaugh says that Jackson will be active on game day so he can be used in various ways. Gosh, I sure like him out there helping us, says Coach John Harbaugh. If you put two quarterbacks on the field at once, what options does it create for your offense? That's what we're trying to figure out. So does this move the needle at all for you guys?
You're the one who talked about him a lot in the preview.
I love it, dude.
You're rooting for him. You're rooting for him.
Needle moving.
But you wanted him to stay a quarterback. You thought it was unfair that teams would even consider him at other positions, right?
Yes, but if you're going to use him as quarterback slash receiver or halfback or what have you until the Joe Flacco situation gets figured out and you can move him out of town and then you can slide Lamar Jackson into the quarterback spot, I'm all for finding ways to get guys on the field.
Yes.
And generally speaking, I'm into creative stuff, especially as it pertains to football. Like when I watch youth football with my kids, I hate to watch like the 3 yards and a cloud of dust like mentality. So when you're talking about getting more creative, putting another guy out there somewhere who can throw the ball and you can show me something that I don't normally see in an NFL game, like I'm down for that. So for me, that moves the needle a lot for a lot of reasons.
I agree. I was quiet before because I was thinking about it, but I think this moves the needle a lot for me too. I'm definitely a fan of Lamar Jackson.
Yeah.
Thank you for speaking up.
Thank you.
Sorry, guys. I was really thinking about it, okay?
Yeah, all right. So
we teased it earlier.
Yeah, we're going to go
picks and props.
Picks and props.
Picks and props.
Killing it. We're glad we have Hannah actually making a pick today, but we're not going to find out the result until Sunday night or Monday morning. Yeah, so Raja's in the lead right now.
That
since we started
orange.
Keeping track about a month ago, Danny in second, I'm in third. Hannah.
I look like I have like a poor Syracuse education.
So that Indians game didn't work out for you the other day?
The Cardinals lost to the Padres when I faded you guys. So I'm just looking for stuff here. So the pick today, will Jordan Spieth, we didn't talk too much about him when we were breaking down the U.S. Open.
It's another good name.
Finish in the top 10. And I picked this because there's almost even odds. It's plus 120 for it to be a yes. But will Jordan Spieth finish in the top 10?
It's another really good name. And I was a little rattled during that segment trying to like settle into hosting the damn pod. It's really nerve-wracking, though. I got to be honest. Like, I give Danny a lot of credit. Like, I was in a full sweat over here. It was real struggles. But Jordan's a really good name because he's one of those grinders. He's one of those guys that's got a nice short game, can get up and down. I do think he'll be hanging around this weekend. I say he finishes in the top 10.
I'm going to go no. Hannah?
I'm going to go yes.
Okay.
Hannah, let's ride.
Going with the first place. The prop here. So we know Danny's not here. He's, like I said, frolicking at Shinnecock right
frolicking.
Now.
Yeah, mental image I have of Danny frolicking. Fantastic.
Sure, Alabama fans love that. Over under one birdie, you would score in 18 holes at Shinnecock.
At Shinnecock laid out for the U.S. Open or at Shinnecock like for public play?
Yes. in 72 holes, you get to play 4 days of golf at Shinnecock. Over under one birdie you score. Or would it be a push?
I think it's going to be a push.
Just that one?
It's going to be a push, yeah. I think my high of birdies in a round might be three birdies. Like, I'm not, and that's on like regular golf courses with slow greens. So I'm going to say push because I think I'll squeeze a birdie out, but I wouldn't be counting on too many of it.
I'm not answering. I plead the fifth.
Hannah's
avoiding this one.
Hyped up her basketball abilities, but she's not going to do that.
No faith in the golf game?
No, I've never. I've only done putt-putt like with alcohol. I don't know. I don't know what it
no
would
top
be
golf?
Like.
No
top golf. And if I did that, I would probably also be with
some alcohol. You
know, some alcohol. So I don't know. I have yet to experience that. We have to have like a pod
take
outing.
Just take the under. You take the under.
No, I plead the fifth. Right. But we have to have like a pod outing. Danny's been talking about this for a while.
Top
golf. We'll do some top golf.
We've got Gary Parrish with us. NBA draft coming up on the 21st. He's a CBS Sports College Basketball Insider and host of the CBS Eye on College Basketball podcast. At Gary Parrish, CBS on Twitter. Gary, so look, we're sitting here looking at the mock draft, and I think what sticks out to me is a lot of boards have Luka Doncic at number two. You've actually got him at number three and Marvin Bagley at two going to the Kings. Can you talk to me about that a little bit? What is it that you see there? Because admittedly, I'm not that familiar with Doncic.
Well, there are reports out there that the Kings are not enamored with Doncic, but are very interested in Bagley. Now, as you know as well as I, at this point, there's a lot of information and a lot of misinformation, and so we will see. I firmly believe one way or another that, you know, Ayton's coming off the board first, DeAndre Ayton, the one-and-done star from Arizona. He's going to be a member of the Phoenix Suns. And then after that, I think Bagley Doncic come off the board in some order. Jaren Jackson might pop into the top three one way or another. Same thing for Mo Bamba. But I think the most likely scenario now is that the top three off the board are going to be Ayton, Bagley, Doncic in some order. And after that, there's a jumble of prospects that could all go 4, 5, 6, 7 in almost any order. That's where the draft, I think, really gets interesting.
It does. Back to the top of it real quick, though. The DeAndre Ayton pick to Phoenix, and then that everyone regards him as the can't miss. Can you talk to me about why everyone feels that strongly? Because I didn't get enough of a sample size in terms of seeing his games. Like, I'm sure if I really did a deep dive, I could figure it out. But I didn't see enough of his games. What it is about him that separates him from a Marvin Bagley or Mo Bamba?
Well, I'll be honest. You are right that most people do project him as a can't-miss, the obvious number one pick. I'm not sure I do. He can't miss in the sense that he's not going to be terrible. There's no chance of that, I mean, barring injuries, of course. But I'm not sure he's an absolute star the way, say, in 2003, everybody knew the guy going first, LeBron James, was an absolute star. 2012, everybody knows the guy going first, Anthony Davis, is an absolute star. With Ayton, he's awesome. I mean, he's physically built like nobody else in this draft. I always thought it was interesting that anytime you turned on an Arizona game this season and just you didn't have to know anything about anybody. If I just paused it and said, who out there doesn't look like the other guys? It was always DeAndre Ayton. His shoulders, his body, his length, wingspan, his ability to be great around the rim, but also step away from 15 feet face up. It suggests that he's going to be able to do what modern bigs are asked to do so often, which is get away from the rim, create driving lanes, be able to knock down that shot. All the stuff there is there for superstardom. But I will be honest. If I were running the Suns, I'd be looking at DeAndre Ayton, no question, and I might actually take him. But I have Marvin Bagley in that conversation as well. I think they're both incredible prospects. And I'm not sure Ayton is obviously the better one. But I do think that it's going to be hard to imagine a scenario where he's not really good. It's just a question of can he be great. I certainly see why people think he can. But I'm not 100% there.
Yeah, that's interesting. And you kind of talked about the modern big in the NBA. There's been the transition to guys that can step out on the perimeter and do more. And there are two guys, you know, that I've just been watching in workouts recently that seem to be making a little noise. One is Mo Bamba, who I think is more of a, when you think of him, he's more of a typical big, but he's got these videos out of the range and the shot mechanics that he's been working on. And then Jaren Jackson, who I don't, when I look at him, he doesn't seem like a typical big to me. Jaren Jackson Jr., he seems more like a three, but he's like 6'11". So what about those two? Do you think they can make that transition? And which one of them is more of a threat to maybe a Marvin Bagley or DeAndre Ayton?
Either one of those guys could go as high as number two based on the fact that they can do things that normal humans can't do. I mean, when you watch them, you're seeing all of the stuff that general managers are in love with. I would lean more toward Bamba if I were picking up there and choosing between those two than I would Jaren Jackson. But Jackson had an incredible workout within the past week, and there are apparently franchises that are interested in going all the way up to three or four if Atlanta or Memphis is willing to deal to grab him. Bamba is somebody that just literally measures in ways that no NBA player measures. When he steps into that league as a rookie, he will have the best wingspan of any professional basketball player in the world. And though he is more of a traditional center, he does absolutely have the ability in time to step away from the basket and be able to knock down three-pointers even the way, you know, maybe Marc Gasol does in Memphis right now. If you go look at Mark's season-by-season statistics, he was not a three-point shooter or threat in any way in year one, year two, year three. For most of his career, David Fizdale came in, now the head coach of the Knicks, but at the time coach of the Grizzlies, and basically demanded Mark step away from the basket and take those shots. Even if you don't make them, I need you taking them. Mark has become a reliable threat from there, and I could absolutely see Bamba being that as well. He and Jackson have this in common. They're both, I feel like, can't miss guys on the defensive end of the court. Different players, but Jaren Jackson's somebody that projects, you know, capable of switching everything. He's got really good instincts on the defensive end of the court. 6'11 athlete, so he's going to alter shot. He's going to block shots. And then Bamba, more of a rim protector than a switch everything big. But either way, I think they can both be difference makers on that end of the court, like right from the jump. The reason I prefer Bamba to Jackson is twofold. One, you know, we've been watching these guys play, and scouts have been watching these guys play for years and years and years. They've always been in the same class, and literally nobody ever preferred Jaren Jackson to Mo Bamba. Would they go into their 1 years of college, Bamba to Texas, Jaren Jackson to Michigan State? Mo Bamba was actually a productive, really good player. Jaren Jackson only played 21 minutes a game at Michigan State. And I know some people put that more on Tom Izzo than Jaren Jackson. It's hard for me to forget that in a year where we saw freshmen like DeAndre Ayton be awesome at Arizona, Marvin Bagley awesome at Duke, Trey Young awesome at Oklahoma, Wendell Carter awesome at Duke. And, yeah, I think Mo Bamba, at least in spurts, really, really good at Texas. Jaren Jackson was just a guy. 21 minutes a game, disappeared a lot, you know, in the NCAA tournament against Syracuse, completely ineffective. And to me, that's the concern. I understand why he's a great prospect, but I've never seen him be a great player. And so I'm more of, like, in these situations where the prospects are comparable, I want to lean toward the guy that, A, has had the better reputation forever, and, B, was actually productive in his 1 year of college. But I like them both, and if they both end up going in the top five or six, it won't be a surprise to me.
So both of those guys, great defensive players, and you kind of alluded to that. I want to switch gears for a second about a guy who's not heralded for his defense. It's Trey Young out of Oklahoma. There are reports out there that the Suns might be trying to pick up another pick so they can grab him. What's the temperature on him in the league? Like, I mean, I don't have my finger on the pulse necessarily of the workouts and who's where and whose stock is rising. Like, what's the NBA feel about Trey Young? Is he hit or miss? Is there some middle ground for him? Where are you at on that?
Yeah, I think there's middle ground for basically everybody. But he is, I think, by traditional terms, a hit or miss guy, because he's certainly going to go in the lottery, I would think top 10. And the opinions on him vary drastically. Some think that he's going to be physically overwhelmed and it's just not going to translate to the NBA. And I can see that. And others think that his ability to create shots, make shots, his vision, his passing ability is going to make him a difference maker in a game where shot creators and shot makers are valued perhaps more than ever. The one thing I will say is that you hear a lot of people, the Steph Curry comparisons are obvious, perhaps unfair, but when he makes shots from the places on the court where he makes shots and looks a lot like Steph sometimes creating them, those were always going to come. And I see the same things everybody else sees. It's right in front of you. The only thing I would say is that sometimes I get asked all the time, so do you think he's the next Steph Curry? And my response is, Steph Curry's a three-time world champion with two MVPs. No, I don't think he's that. I don't think anybody in this draft is that, if only because how many in modern history three-time champions and two MVPs are there? Like, that's, Steph is in such rare company that you can't set the bar there. But I do think Trae Young can be good. And when people say, really, and I mean really good, and when people say, but, you know, even Steph is small, but he's smaller than Steph, that's true right now when we're talking about a 19-year-old Trae Young. But if you go look at 19-year-old Trae Young and 19-year-old Steph Curry, according to the measurements at the time, Trae Young's actually bigger right now than Steph Curry was at the same age. And if you get next to Trae, he comes across as very, very small on television. In person, he doesn't strike you quite the same way. So I can see him being, yeah, a defensive liability, but so good on the offensive end that you're willing to put up with it. The point I've made before is, because somebody asked me, how's he going to guard Russell Westbrook? Well, nobody guards Russell Westbrook. So like, right. You guard him like everybody else does. How's he going to guard James Harden? Well, he won't. Nobody does. Nobody can guard James Harden. And I don't think it's I think it's worth pointing out that James Harden and Damian Lillard were both first-team All-NBA this year. Neither one of them are considered anything other than defensive liabilities. Now, they've got size in different ways than Trae does, but still, they both get eaten up on that end of the court, and yet it doesn't stop them from being excellent at what they do. And so I'm a believer in Trae Young. I lean more toward he's got a chance to be special because the shot creating, the shot making, it's all there. That stuff is like, it's, you know, you have to guard him, and this is why Steph is so devastating for defenses and a player that has to be guarded in ways that defenses rarely have to guard people. He can comfortably pull from 30 feet, like, and you have to honor that. And so that's there. That translates. But, you know, there's going to be somebody who likes him all the way up to maybe number five, but he could also – another franchise might not take him to the top 10. I'll bottom line it this way. He's going to make general managers look stupid one way or another because he's either going to be great and he goes too low in this draft, or he's going to not just be a dude and he's going to go too high in this draft and somebody will probably end up paying with his job. But I would lean toward I'm more of a believer than a non-believer. I think he's got just a handful of unique qualities that are going to allow him to flourish in at least.
Well, he's certainly fun to watch, and I hope you're right because I'm pulling for him. I like to pull for a guy like that who comes defies all odds with his size and stuff like that. Let's go to a segment we like to do. We like to have fun with it towards the end of the interview. It's called Superlatives, and so I'm gonna ask you a couple questions, and it'll be a little quicker than the rest. So the first question I have is: best player in this year's draft in 10 years from now?
I'll go with Marvin Bagley. And I know the more common answer you're going to get to that is DeAndre Ayton, and I certainly respect that. When talking about the NBA draft, I always preface everything by, you know what, I could be wrong. And the reason is because, like, the 30 people who run these franchises are wrong every single year. Like, the people who ran Philadelphia this time last year were wrong to move up to take Markelle Fultz. Jason Tatum should have been the pick, or as we find out subsequently, Donovan Mitchell. How did Donovan Mitchell go 13th? That means 12 franchises at least, or maybe 11, depending on what you think of Tatum, were wrong. So this draft stuff is complicated, certainly for me and everybody. But I would go towards Bagley just for these reasons. you know, if he was the best 15-year-old at his age in the world, 16-year-old in the world, 17-year-old in the world, went to Duke, all ACC performer, first-team All-American, ACC Player of the Year, super productive, shot it well from three-point range. He's an incredible athlete, great second jumper, somebody who can make a shot, plays with energy every possession, which you don't always get from these top-shelf guys. I don't see any way that he's not really good. And I can also envision a way where he has an impact like, I don't know, maybe Amari Stoudemire, just flying around, dunking everything. I like him a lot.
Okay. What is the most likely way that the Knicks will screw up the ninth pick in this year's draft?
I mean, that's the thing. I live in Memphis, and the Grizzlies fans aren't even excited about the fourth pick because they just assume they're going to mess it up like they did with the team to beat way back then. Like, I can't, it's almost depressing. They're like, oh, we'll just screw it up. It doesn't matter who we take. With the Knicks, I mean, that's the thing. You know, whether it's the Knicks or anybody picking in that range, you're sort of out of the range where people think there's a future star. And you're just like almost looking for somebody who can be a quality starter for you. You know, whether that's Miles Bridges or Mikal Bridges, if Wendell Carter drops, if Trae Young's there for some reason. But I think the most disastrous situation would be Michael Porter Jr. slips because of concerns about his medicals. They take him because they're so enamored with his upside, and then we find out that the back actually was a long-term problem, and you've got mediocre, injured Michael Porter Jr. and a total wasted roster spot next to Porzingis, who's also coming off injury.
All right, last one. What is the most likely team to trade up into the top 10 and throw this thing for a loop?
I don't know exactly which one, but it would be somebody, I think, based on what I'm hearing over the past few days, that is in love with Jaren Jackson. You know, everybody knows that Ayton's coming off the board one, and then after that, like I said at the start, probably Doncic, Bagley in some order, but there are teams out there, and I might live in the market where one of those teams exists, that really like Jaren Jackson and really think he can be the best player from this draft, even if he was a mostly irrelevant college basketball player. And so if you know Ayton's off the board, and let's just say Sacramento's going to take Bagley or Doncic, but you think Atlanta at 3 or Memphis at 4 is moving into the Jaren Jackson range, and you genuinely believe that's the guy, not for Rookie of the Year, but for All-NBA 3 years from now, 5 years from now, then I could see any franchise willing to go up and get into that position. So I think the most likely answer to that question is whichever franchise loves Jaren Jackson is the franchise that's going to try to do a deal, not today, but on draft night, to get up into that 3, 4, 5 range to see if they can take the guy that they actually believe would be the best player from this draft a couple of years, 5 years from now.
Well, there you have it. Full draft breakdown with Gary Parrish. Thanks, Gary. You can read his mock drafts and listen to his pod. Gary Parrish, CBS Sports College Basketball Insider, host of the CBS Eye on College Basketball podcast, at Gary Parrish CBS on Twitter. Thanks again for hanging out.
Alex, my pleasure. Good to talk to you, man. I'll see you soon.
All right, no doubt. Okay, guys, that wraps up like my first time driving. It
Woo-hoo!
Was a train wreck.
How did it feel?
Like, I was really nervous, I got to be honest. Like, I don't.
Train wreck.
Yeah, I got a lot of respect for people who do this. But thanks for hanging out. Let us know how you think I did. Like, I'd be curious to see how we did on Twitter. You could follow us at. Thank you. Thank you, thank you, Anna. At Kennell and Bell on Twitter. Lobby for this name change at Bell and Kennell on Twitter. But again, thanks for hanging out. Danny will be back on Friday. And that's it. See ya.